Episode is called The Bat in Four Parts. It all began in the late 1980s.
It all started in the late 1980s. I was going to art school over by MacArthur Park, and my dorm was also by MacArthur Park. And back then, this was a very dangerous area to be in. It was so dangerous. One time, we were walking down the sidewalk and some police stopped us and they just said, "What are you doing here?" And we said, "We're art students." And we pointed at our dorm room and we said, "We live right there." And these police officers were mystified that we were doing such a thing. But at the time, I thought, maybe that's what young artists are supposed to do. Live in weird areas. But it was bad for you. It could really wear on you. So sometimes we would drive out to the beaches and just kind of walk around and breathe in all that fresh air. And other times, we would go out to the Palm Desert, out to 29 Palms, and we would walk around, and out there, you might come across abandoned shacks made out of cinder blocks, just one-room shacks, just enough to keep that property officially yours. So anyway, we would go out to these shacks and we might knock on the door if it looks totally abandoned. And if no one opened up, we might try the doorknob. And if the doorknob was unlocked, we might just go inside and have a little look around. And it was strange what you'd find in there. Rooms that had not been touched since probably the 1950s or the 60s. And just filled with dust, animal poop, and whatever was left behind. Old popular science magazines, weird old furniture, stuff no one wanted anymore. But mainly, we were just getting away from the grip of the city and all that it had to offer, good or bad. And so, on one of these trips, we're walking around out in the middle of the desert, not talking to one another, and I look over and I see a child's baseball bat, a wooden baseball bat, just laying out there in the desert, sand and sun, looking all weathered. And I saw it, and something in me said, "That is something I need." And so I picked it up, and when we returned to our dorm room, I put that baseball bat in my car.
I see. So this lost child's bat, this sad and lonely piece of wood that had lain in the desert for we don't know how long.
Right.
This became your sort of security blanket for whenever you were in your car.
Well, security blankets, pushing it, definitely. Okay. I never thought of it in those terms. I thought of it as a tool of desperation.
Okay.
Because if things had gotten bad enough where I'm pulling out this bat, then it's an indication that things have really gotten out of hand.
Right. I get that. Can you give us an example of one such desperate moment?
Yeah, sure. Well, the first one comes to mind is from June of 1992. We were about to graduate from that art school I mentioned earlier. And just days before the ceremony, the Rodney King riots broke out. On the second day, we were still in shock, but so far as we knew, we were still graduating in a few days, and we had to get ready for our senior thesis exhibition. And so we all returned to school. We had the news on the radio, and we were all discussing our disappointment and how the court case had ended. And what we did experienced the night before, getting home from school. And now we were back to work on our senior thesis exhibit when the head of our department came running in and said everyone had to evacuate. We went outside, and a building on either side of the building we were in was on fire. Everyone got to their cars and started driving out of the parking lot. It was somewhere in the middle of the day, still fairly early, and there were black clouds everywhere, just smoke filling the sky. It was sunny otherwise, or had been. When I got to my car, I realized I was nearly out of gas. I was on fumes, and I hadn't planned this out very well. And so I started driving my normal route that would have taken me to Vermont Avenue, which is loaded with stores. But I could see from the smoke that lined Vermont that the whole street was basically on fire. Everything was just huge black clouds. So I turned a few streets beforehand. I turned right, and I went to, I believe it was Santa Monica Avenue, or it was Beverly. Either way, as I drove along that way, everyone who had been burning those buildings on Vermont and taking things from those stores were now running down the street I was on. Tens of people, probably hundreds, all carrying heavy objects on their shoulders or in their arms, running towards me. It was like a river of people, and I was running out of gas, and I was going very slowly, and I was waving a lot. I was waving friendly, smile on my face, just, "Hi, I'm sorry, do you mind?" And I would give them a little hand signal to move aside, and every one of them smiled back, and they were all busy, but they still showed me the standard human friendliness, which in the circumstances I was very happy to receive. I drove to the street I wanted, and I turned left, and I pulled into a gas station in a location where I could look down Vermont and just see everything that was happening. There's a shoe store nearby. People had broken in the shoe store, and the few police officers that were there were standing near the shoe store, and people were throwing shoes at the police and laughing. And as I put gas in my tank, I noticed the only other customers were men who were filling up gas cans, and they were staring at me, and these people were not smiling. And anyway, I finally got to the place where I lived, which was with this older, kindly couple who collected a little bit of art and lived in a really nice big house in Hollywood that had walls going around it. And there was a tiny old Spanish-style guest house where I lived. And I was basically their part-time butler. And this is how I paid my rent. I'd do their dishes at night. I would do some gardening. I would wash the windows in their home, that kind of thing, to pay off my debt and pay for my rent. And so I pulled into the driveway and I shut the gate behind me and I went in the house, and my girlfriend had arrived prior to me, and I checked in with her. And then I was so full of energy and anxiety that I couldn't help but go outside and walk around the perimeter of the house to see what was going on. And as I did so, I had my baseball bat in my hand, and I thought, boy, I hope it doesn't come to me using this thing, because it would just be pathetic and I would lose without a doubt, because I'm not trained in fighting. But it felt good to have a prop, and at one point I was walking around and some men came to the gate where I had just pulled in a little while before. And they shook the gate to see that it was locked. And there's a group of them, and they looked down the driveway just trying to figure out what was worth anything in this area. And I was only a few feet away, pressing my body against the wall, holding the bat to my chest with both hands gripping the handle. And I thought, well, if one guy hops over, I'll get one good swing in before the other guys get over and overwhelm me, but I'm gonna do this thing. But luckily, they turned and went the other way. Sometime around 1998-99, I was living in Echo Park, which is also part of Los Angeles, and I said to my roommate Brian, I said, Brian, you know what I want to do? I want to go to Zanku Chicken over in Glendale and get some dinner. What do you say? You want to go with me? And he says, yeah. And so we go out and we get in my car and we're driving along, and we get eventually the 2 freeway, and which is a short freeway that runs alongside Silver Lake and Eagle Rock, and eventually will get you to the border of Glendale. And so Brian and I are just driving along, having a nice little conversation. He was trying to be a writer, I was trying to be a painter and a musician. We always had something to talk about. It was a quiet little night, but this is a story about the bat, so you know that's coming up. Unbeknownst to me, I had irritated someone in traffic, a man, of course, and he was following us in angry, hot pursuit. But meanwhile, Brian and I are just having a nice little drive. We're going to Zanku Chicken. We're going to get some very garlicky shawarma or something like that. We're like, this is a good night to be young and have some shawarma. So anyway, we're driving along, and as we're entering the two, we're going up the on-ramp. This guy's right behind us. I was unaware of this. So this guy, there's hardly anyone on the two with us. It's just really us. And suddenly, this guy, who had pulled ahead of us, came screaming, hitting his brakes, but still somehow at fast speed, and he goes across the front of our car where his back bumper almost hits our front bumper. Now, I'm probably going somewhere around 65, 70 already, so this guy had screamed past. Now he slammed on his brakes and then hit his accelerator. He cuts across our front, and we both go, "Whoa, what was that?" He pulls to our left. I look over, and I could just see in the shadows of the light and the whatnot, because it's nighttime, but there are lights on the freeway. I could see a mouth moving in this semi-lit world, and it's ranting and raving and gnashing. These teeth are gnashing, and the face is distorted by rage, and now I'm thinking I'm gonna have to find some rage to get through this, maybe, or I'm gonna have to at least meet him somewhere where I'm gonna, I don't know, find a balance and not just be a victim, because all of a sudden it's looking like I'm in a fight despite having absolutely, seemingly no skin in the game, and I'm absolutely in just a cheerful mood. So I decide I'm gonna meet him where he's coming from. I don't get angry, I just start laughing, and so now I pick up my pace and I cut across his front, and then he does the same thing, and we're doing the zigzag game where we're cutting across each other's front. Each time it seems like we're getting a little closer, and my roommate Brian is not so red hot on this idea. He's like, maybe we could just this, maybe we could just that, slow down, let him go ahead, maybe we could, but there's no other exits. There's no exit till the one we want, which is Colorado. I don't think there's any exits. That's the way I remember it, so I guess that's the truth. Anyway, so we're driving along screaming at, like, I don't know. It was fast for me and my old bucket of a car. So we're zigzagging. At one point, he rolled down his window and threw something at us, and it looked like an apple. It went under our car, and he's just still raving. And we still don't know why he's mad. And so we keep grazing each other's bumpers. And this is a very dangerous and stupid game. And needless to say, I was quite young still, at least young in my heart and mind. And I'm not proud of any of this, because this is really stupid. And we almost died, basically, because had we really touched bumpers, I think something terrible would have happened. So anyway, now I'm kind of scared of this guy, or at least I'm aware that he's a real threat. And so when we get to our exit, I come racing down that exit at almost top speed, and I barrel down, I get a green light, and I swerve left, and I pull into a gas station which is really well lit, and I leap out of the car holding the baseball bat in my hand, and I'm like holding it with one hand and trying to strike a very manly pose, you know, arms apart, feet spread apart, ready to spring, that kind of thing. And I'm like waving, you know, I'm just holding the bat, trying to look really calm, like I do this all the time. And this guy had followed us off the freeway, and when he saw me standing there ready, he just drove by really slow, trying to eyeball me, but it was too late. I was beyond it. He just kept going. I got back in the car, threw the bat in the back seat where it lived, and Brian and I went and we had some very delicious Zanku chicken. End of story. Run, 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 cause you're soft. Run, run, don't get lost. The shining moon, a dead oak tree. Nights like this appeal to me. I got some loving arms around me. The shining moon, the dead oak tree. Nights like this appeal to me. I've got some loving arms around me. Trying to steal a moment of pleasantry in this zombie birdhouse. Run! 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 Run like a villain at the good time. Run like a villain to save your soul. It can't be done, I already know. So I'll run like a villain to the sugar bowl.
Cause who you are, nobody knows. Who you are, nobody knows you. Rings on your fingers and bells on your toes.
Well, welcome back. You're live on the air at WGXC, Acre, New York, Wave Farm Radio. In regards to the bat, I only have one final question. When was the last time that you saw it?
When both my parents had died, my sisters and I gathered at our childhood home, and we were cleaning it out. We were getting ready to sell it. While doing this, we were gathering everything out on the front lawn, and we had a 40-foot long dumpster, and part of my job was to fill the dumpster and make sure that everything we had would fit in, and it was looking like things wouldn't fit, even though that's a huge dumpster. There were just so many things, so much furniture, childhood furniture, furniture we'd all sat on for all the major holidays, furniture that had been around for a long time and had so many memories, but nothing that we could keep. And while it was heartbreaking, we had to be tough, and we had to get rid of nearly everything. And so while I was doing this, I was pulling things out of the garage, and I looked over and I saw the bat. It was leaning there. At some point in the way back past, before I moved to New York back in 2002, I must have emptied my car and put everything in this garage. That garage had been a catch-all for all the kids' stuff over the years, and then the grandkids, and then the great-grandkids, probably. Anyway, the problem is there was just a lot of stuff. So I found the bat, and I took it out, and I thought, well, maybe it'll help me break up some of these old chairs. And the thing was, it really did. It held together. I thought it would shatter the first time it hit anything, but this bat had this strong inner core, and I don't want to turn it into some kind of human-like element, but it seemed like it was much stronger than I'd ever known this whole time. And anyway, I used it to smash up all this old furniture that had so many memories. And I'll tell you the truth, I was kind of on the verge of tears for a while because it was truly heartbreaking, but there was nothing I could do about it. We tried to give it away, the furniture. A lot of it was old and beat up, but it was terrible. There was a big round table that had a leaf that you could drop in it, becoming a big oval, and we'd sat there for every Christmas breakfast for I don't know how many decades. Well, 2.5, roughly, 3 maybe. And when I turned it over to break the legs off of it, there were handprints painted on the bottom, handprints of the grandchildren. My mom had been playing with paint with the grandkids, the great-grandkids, and all of them had crawled under the table at various points in time and pressed their hands on the underside and scribbled on there with crayons. And I smashed it. I smashed it all. I used this old bat to break everything up and fit it in the dumpster. And it's funny, but it really haunts me. I think about it sometimes. Me breaking up all these chairs. And anyhow, when we finished with the house, when we finished emptying it of everything, and right before the dumpster got taken away, I lay the bat inside the dumpster. It was, I was going to be flying home, and I just didn't picture bringing it with me. And I'm kind of sorry I did that, but it seemed right at the time. So the last time I saw that bat, it was at the top of a very full dumpster being carried down the street by a very large truck.